Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Podcast where three bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Cardover Kate. I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
And semi-regular co-host, Mr. Sheets himself.
Andy Conduit Turner. Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Yo.
What's going on? What's happening? Is everyone all right?
What is going on? Not bad. How are you?
Yeah, not bad.
he's absolutely fine, mate. He's lovely.
There's a lot going on.
What's the temperature like in your little garage area, Luke?
I don't know. It's okay. It's not that bad. The other day, though, I was working, and I've got some pins and needles in my fingertips. I looked down and they were like blue. My fingertips had turned blue without me realizing. I don't know, because I was just typing away maybe and not realized. But it can get cold in here.
Yeah. What about the heater? What about the space heater, mate? Come on, give that a little bit of a.
Put it away.
Give that a little bit of love. Put it away.
One swallow does not make a summer, Luke. You thought, summertime. Put this in the loft.
But it was like summertime for
two weeks. Lock it up, throw away the key.
Yeah, like 2 weeks I couldn't sleep because it was too hot, and now it's like freezing all of a sudden.
Very interesting.
Yeah, man. Have you got any horror news? Perchance?
There's a few minor things. I guess horror is probably like one of the last things on people's minds currently. But we're here to provide a distraction, a welcome distraction, which is three guys talking shite. So, come to the right place. So in terms of horror news, I haven't seen too much. Have you heard about this HBO series called Lovecraft Country, which is going to be debuting fairly soon? I think so. It's based on a novel, HBO horror drama series based on a novel by Matt Ruff, and it's debuting in August. Is Jordan Peele involved somehow? Is he a producer or like maybe a...
Safe to assume so.
Okay, so J.J. Abrams, Jordan Peele, and a few other people are also sort of involved. I don't know all that much about it, but so it begins with a struggle to survive, to overcome both the racist terrors of white America and the terrifying monsters that could be ripped from H.P. Lovecraft paperback.
I like the whole twisting the more racist parts of H.P. Lovecraft stories, because there's a lot to love about H.P. Lovecraft apart from that big part of him. But yeah, this is good. I think it's more of like, it's sort of an anthology, or there's like separate stories that are told that maybe come together at the end.
Stories in the same sort of place, a bit like maybe Castle Rock, possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know, from the trailer, that's the kind of vibe I got from looking at it, but I need to look a bit more into it. Has anybody read the book?
No, I've seen it knocking around quite a bit, and a lot of people really like it. But no.
Yeah, cool. But there's that, which I thought I'd mention. That could be something cool for people to look forward to. Also read a little bit about Ridley Scott talking about his third Alien prequel.
Just let him do it. He's this far
just let
in.
Him do it, yeah.
I was gonna do it anyway. It doesn't matter what I say. Come on.
So apparently it was at one point titled Alien Awakening. But I don't know if it's going to be called that. But he apparently said he still thinks there's a lot of mileage in Alien, but I think you have to now re-evolve. I feel like Prometheus was the re-evolve, and yeah. Alien Covenant was the, okay, let's take a step back again. If we re-evolve again, like, what on earth are we going to have? You know?
He's also not thinking about old Ridley. No, he's not thinking about either digitally or in physical copies. How am I meant to put these on my shelves? It throws it out of the window alphabetically.
Yeah.
Like, if I've got a digital collection, what's that going to do?
You think they should rename Prometheus to Alien Prometheus? It feels like it would make
because
sense.
Covenant would still be first. Alphabetically, it's no good.
But it's called...
You just have to do it in the order of release, surely, and that kind of sucks, but you'd have to do it in the order. But what... when did the film end? Where was the film in terms of ending in Covenant? What had happened? Is it that the eggs were being transported off of the...
Yeah, so Michael infected the main characters when they were going to hypersleep. Is his name Michael?
David.
What's the actor's name? Is that Michael?
Michael, yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah,
Michael. Mikey boy was infected
old
people.
Old Mickey Jib.
It's cool.
Because I remember... I love the Alien films. I love the Alien universe. And after watching Covenant, I was kind of like, that was pretty cool. But then I watched it again. I was like, well, it's kind of just like... it's like a greatest hits of the Alien franchise, really, isn't it? It's not a new story. And I think that's what I respected Prometheus for being, is that it was an entirely new story. It did get a bit ridiculous in terms of the convoluted origin of the Xenomorph, where it's like, well, it started off like this, and then that happened, and then that mated with that, and then this went in a lady's tummy, and then it came out.
Different shaped head. And then...
It was just too convoluted. I think, I know it's too late now, we can't go back, but I loved the fact that it was just a mystery. You know, we never knew what happened to the space jockey. What was the name of that race?
That's the annoying thing about space jockeys. I think that's a technical term. I hated that about Covenant. It revealed this planet where the Prometheus people were from, and then they all got obliterated, sort of essentially off.
You just
camera.
dropped
a bomb. Yeah. But I got the impression that we're going to go to some sort of amazing future world thing. But it was just, I don't know, there was nothing there, just a few caves, a few tents.
Yeah. A few caves and David playing the flute.
Yeah.
I think these things are all far better when you just leave something. Like, I quite like the mystery. Like, I'm sure it's been examined if you go to comics and stuff, but I never want a film, let's go to the other side of this coin, I never want a film on the Predator planet. I want that to be left alone. I like these things that are mysterious. Unless you can ever do it absolutely perfectly, then things are so much richer and better when you leave people to imagine what they could be. And for me, the Alien movies, the only one I've been truly excited about since the tour de force that is Alien Resurrection, which I secretly love.
I like
it. The only one I've been excited by. Prometheus, I went and I had high hopes, and I think I came out of the cinema and enjoyed parts of it, but retrospectively, like, I know that there are confused things about it. But the only one I was really excited about is the one that didn't happen, the Niall Blomkamp, the one that had Sigourney Weaver. I'd love to see that, and I loved the concept drawings they did for it. It looked exciting, and it looked weird, and it looked... I want these things to give me more things to think about that aren't fully fleshed out for you to go away and think about. Think about when we were too young to watch it when they first came out, and you imagined and you made up the stories for yourself based on the toys you get that were like a bull and a bat.
Do you think kids still do that? I think, like, we used to get a film, like, you'd see a poster of a film or a trailer, and then you think, I'm going to have to wait 4 years till I ever get to see that for on VHS. But then, like, you sort of invent loads of stuff, and you watch the video again and again and again, and you sort of invent because you've got so much spare time. Now it's like, once you've done one film, you're straight on to the next one.
You've got TikToks in the meantime.
Exactly, yeah. I kind of feel like maybe kids don't do that anymore. I don't know.
Yeah. So apparently that Alien 5, the Neil Blomkamp one, was going to retcon Alien 3, and apparently it was essentially canned after Alien Covenant, after how that performed, I think.
Yeah, thanks, Ridley.
Or the fact that, yeah, thanks, Ridley. For
the diddly squat.
Apparently the script was amazing. There we go. Apparently the script was amazing. I've read here. James Cameron said, amazing, performs fan service and should be made. So,
yeah, but I mean, James Cameron said that about the last four Terminator movies. And none of them.
And he was right. And he was completely 100%.
Maybe they only showed him. Maybe they only showed him the first 10-15 minutes of Genesis, and he was like, "This is it." And then they went, "Oh, well, I know you're a busy man, so."
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And then the only other bit of news I've got is apparently a 2015 build of the game Dead Island 2 has recently been leaked, mainly just screenshots and stuff on Twitter. Do you remember seeing the trailer for that? And do you ever think, what the hell happened?
Was it reverse? Was it the reverse trailer one?
That's the original, isn't it?
That's the original, yeah. This trailer was like a run it, like a jogger guy, like a running guy.
I remember the trailer.
We had great trailers.
What the bloody hell happened now?
I know a little bit about the background for this. I saw the trailer for Dead Island. Not the trailer. I saw the trailer for Dead Island 2. And I remember it. But I remember straight away thinking, no, fool me once, because I really didn't get on with Dead Island 1.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Didn't the same developer or someone, they split from the publisher, and they kind of evolved the idea into what is
Dying Light.
Dying Light, and it's a bigger thing. And Dying Light 2 is on the way. So do you think it's that combined with? Didn't they get into some hot water, the publishers on that one, over like the special edition of like Dead Island as well? Dead Island Riptide. They did like a the special case like a woman's torso, and everyone was like, is this in bad taste? It's probably in bad taste, and they got some press for that. But Dead Island, I'm sure it meant well, but like I found it a bit dense. I think it was presented as going to be quite a fun zombie game, but then it had crafting and things that break, and I was like, I ain't got the patience for this.
In terms of fun zombie games, that Walking Dead VR game is getting reviewed really well. Have you seen it? Have you seen it? Walking Dead Saints and Sinners.
I've seen a little bit of gameplay, possibly.
A lot of people are saying it's really good. I think it has got some crafting in it, so you might not like it. But like apparently that the feeling of sort of grabbing a zombie's head and stabbing, like smashing a bottle and then stabbing them in the head and shoving them away is meant to be incredibly satisfying.
Sounds very lovely, mate.
Yeah.
Sounds hella exciting. Yeah, that's it for news. So has anyone been watching anything fun this week?
Yeah, I watched one thing. Talk about Deathgasm. Do you know much about Deathgasm? Have you seen it?
I've heard the title, but I've not seen it. How is it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's I knew that New Zealand, there's a New Zealand Film Commission, like we have in England. We have a film commission here. But I didn't realize that they specifically make horror movies. So there's Deathgasm, Housebound. I think maybe What We Do in the Shadows was part of that. I'm not too sure. But they pump out these great little horror movies. Deathgasm is pretty good. It's about a little black metaler kid who joins a new family, and he starts a little metal band, and they somehow get the sheet music, which is actually like incantations to raise the devil or something. So then it's got a very evil death sort of vibe. Lots of practical effects as well, which is good. But then the weapons they end up using, there's like they get hold of a dildo and they're like smashing up.
I have heard of it. I have.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah.
Oh, the dildo one.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's just the dildo. Wait a minute.
I think I've seen some clips of it. It looks fun. Looks a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. It's cool. Yeah, what about you guys?
How about you, Andy?
Less watching. Like, I haven't done much horror watching of late. There's been we found that a lot of film nights have been like having film nights with other friends. Not all of them are horror adjacent. So we watched A Town Called Panic, which I do love. It's a very funny film. It's made of those, the puppets that are in the Craven, that used to be in the Cravendale milk adverts. It's like a French or Belgian film. It's in French language, but it's very funny. It's just about a horse, a cowboy, and an Indian that live together. It's very funny, not horrific at all. Then I've been playing Spider-Man. Where I have got my horror in has been from comics. You mentioned The Walking Dead. There was a Humble Bundle a couple of weeks ago that had the entire run of The Walking Dead, and I had the comics in various formats, some physical, some digital, and then, you know, across different like platforms and what have you. But all of them were just on there. You could get them in, I think it was CBR or PDF. But they did all of it right until the very end of the whole series. And I fell off getting the comic regularly when there was probably about just 20 or 30 left. But now I've got them all, I've decided I'm going to go back to the very beginning. And
those comics are very readable.
Yeah,
like, you can't really stop.
It's a great series.
Yeah.
It's such a good series. And there are some great moments. I'm starting that over again, and then I'm going to go and get to the end.
There's some great moments.
When the time comes.
I remember, you know, his baby.
Yes.
I remember that being like absolutely shocking. Also, Invincible is also extremely readable. It's extremely great.
I haven't started Invincible yet, but I do want to read it. Like another one as well. Now it's really tantalizing. Now that it's finished, it's like a complete thing. Because I did Why the Last Man, like when it was finished as well, and started it and just read it all the way through. And it's great. Like, it's really satisfying. If you've got like a quiet week or you're on a holiday or something, you can just
blast through a series.
Yeah, yeah, you can blitz on through. But yeah, I've been reading a couple of comics. I've been reading, so before Walking Dead, I've been reading Something is Killing the Children. It's a Boom Studios comic, I think. James Tinian IV is the writer. I forget the name of the artist off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up. But it is a great, you know, it's a great series. It's a lot about like mostly real world, except there are monsters, and it's about a someone who's a monster hunter who's going around and like going up like kids that have survived these hideous massacres of so-called impossible imaginary creatures, and she's hunting them down. The dialogue's super sharp. The action is like brutal. It's a great little read.
It makes me think we should do a horror comic episode of Horror Hangout at some point, because there's some great ones.
That'd be good.
Yeah. Cool, man. What about you, Ben?
So I rewatched Us for the first time since the cinema, just because we were kind of chatting about it, and I thought, I haven't seen that since the cinema. We'll watch it again. Yeah, definitely holds up. Like, just as lovely this time round. In particular, the final sort of battle between Red,
the dance off,
dance fight, Adelaide. There's still like a lot of questions to be asked for it. Like, how has this happened? How does that work? What about this? But you can kind of, in terms of like the iconography and just the cool, like, the great soundtrack, like obviously the orchestral version of I Got Five on it as well, especially in that final battle. It's badass. I definitely prefer Get Out. I feel like Get Out is a lot more striking, and I think it's more it invites rewatches more, I feel like, Get Out.
Yeah.
Whereas with Us, I kind of felt like I was anticipating what was happening I was like, okay, now it's this bit. Oh yeah, okay, now it's this bit.
I think Get Out has more like moments that like you just never forget, like that, even that, like what do you call it, the auction bit, you know those people at the party, the dad character, just generally the guy running towards the main character. It's got so many like little moments that are just like really quite striking and never quite forget.
And then, because I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I've kind of been on a little bit of a Ancient Greece hype. So I watched a couple of ancient Greek movies, like fairly
Hercules,
modern ones.
Well, Hercules Goes to the Underworld with Kevin Sorbo.
No.
Oh,
I definitely didn't bother with old, what's his name?
I used to love those. Yeah.
So I watched Troy, which is probably like one of the obvious ones to watch. The director's cut, which is like 3.5 hours. It's still pretty good, you know. It's got an amazing cast. The battle sequences are great. Brad Pitt is like oiled up. Brad Pitt is like a bit of a douche, though. like as Achilles, you're like, am I supposed to be, is he supposed to, am I rooting for him in any way? He's kind of just,
yeah,
are you the good guy or you're a bad guy? He kind of just goes through killing whoever in that film. Gets a bit boring during the downtime when everyone's just talking about what's going to happen next. Orlando Bloom's a bit of a flannel. Sean Bean is in it. And Sean Bean, spoiler alert, does not die.
Does not die.
No.
I remember Eric Banner being pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. Eric Banner's badass. Eric Banner's
off the back of the Hulk as well, wasn't it? It's like, oh, just change, mate. You can take Achilles out.
His fight with Achilles is awesome. Like, you're really in it. You feel every swipe of the sword. And then I also watched Immortals with
I saw you watch that on Letterboxd. Henry Cavill. Oh, is it Henry Cavill? I didn't realize that. But I saw you watch that, and I was like, I remember not liking that film at all when I watched it. But
it's a bit more style over substance. So it's Tarsem Singh. So it looks like pretty amazing.
Isn't it like post-300?
Oh, yeah. It's got that post-300 sort of like incredibly dark comic book. It, I mean, obviously 300 looks very much like from the pages of the comic book, doesn't it? Where it's very striking. And but it's, you know what? I enjoyed it for what it was. It's ridiculous, over the top. Mickey Rourke is like the most ridiculous bastard villain. But the costume design is like unreal. It's every single piece of costume design. You're like, what is that? What is going on? Helmets and massive headdresses and ridiculous things. But yeah, it's not good.
It's not good, up and it tells a story because I've now you've said the title and I've looked at some pictures. I know I've seen it. I can tell you fuck all about what happens.
Yeah.
Stephen Dorff is in it as well. And when he turned up, I went, there he is, Stephen Dorff. Nice. but honestly, it is. Luke Evans plays Zeus as well. It's ridiculous.
Is it based on an actual? What's the legend? What's the myth? It's retelling.
So it's
Theseus. Oh, okay.
Jesus Christ, put me on the spot. So it's Theseus. What's his name? Mickey Rourke plays King Hyperion, so it's like him taking over various. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. I kind of want to watch 300 again now. We talked about.
Immortals. Yeah, me too. So yeah, because of that, I kind of want to watch 300. I only think I've seen the sequel to 300 once, so I'd like to watch that again. Can't remember what it's called. What's it called? Like 300.
The one with Eva Green in it. That's all I remember.
The one with Eva Green topless for 80% of it.
300 days more. 300 Spartans more.
300 Spartans. And maybe Clash of the Titans and Wrath of the Titans, because I know they're schlocky nonsense.
Yeah.
I've got Clash of the Titans for those.
Is great as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd go back and watch those. You could go watch Jason the Argonauts.
The
Harryhausen skeletons. They're good.
Get all this Harryhausen goodness. Yeah, but it's because I've been spending so many hours on Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Like, I think I'm like approaching 60 hours now. So that's a lot for me.
There's that book. We loved it. Stephen Fry's book about, I think it's called Mythos or something. So like the Greek myths, but Stephen Fry retells them. It's amazing. Like a really genuinely good book. You learned like tons about like the old myths and stuff.
Oh, apparently he's got a Greek myth podcast.
There we go.
Mythos.
Oh, he's a book. Rival now. Can't sanction that though. Competing for downloads.
We listened to the audiobook, Stephen. And it was.
There's an audiobook. I'll have to definitely listen to that. That sounds right on my street.
Got an Audible credit. Spend that wisely. Later on.
I've definitely got an Audible credit. I've probably got absolutely loads. but yeah, like Assassin's Creed Odyssey is amazing. I'm getting to bits now where I'm kind of discovering creatures and mythological beasts and that.
Does it have awesome. Like myth type stuff in it, or is it? I kind of feel like it might be more realistic.
Yeah, DLC.
I think some of it is either DLC or like extra missions, which aren't like additional, which you don't have to kind of complete. They're separate from the main story. But yeah, I've been fighting Medusa, and I can't kill her. I'm just screwed.
Okay.
So yeah, it's good though. It's good. It's probably a little bit better than Origins, and I loved Origins. So.
I liked Origins. I'm not quite done with it. I got sidetracked, but it was good. And maybe I've just got to that point where silly. I did an optional free DLC mission, which now means I'm riding around on like a camel that looks a lot like a chocobo.
Yeah. Good times, man. Good times.
Cool. And then I guess it was The Blob, which me and Andy were watching on, I don't know, Saturday night.
Saturday? Saturday night.
And then Andy said, you should definitely do this for the podcasts. And then I was like, yeah, well, that's Ben. Because it's a sort of a classic. Is it a classic? I kind of feel like it is, but that might just be my nostalgia.
I wasn't sure which version you were watching until I was about halfway through this one, and I went, oh, shit, don't tell me they watched the original, and I had to, like, go back and look at your message to see. But luckily, I watched the right one. So this is the first time I've seen this, never seen this before. And it's on my 100 must-see horror films poster, and I can scratch it off.
Nice.
That's cool. You're welcome. The Blob, 1988. You've got some information about it.
Sure. So The Blob is a 1988 American science fiction horror film co-written and directed by Chuck Russell. It's a remake of the 1958 film of the same name. Stars Shawnee Smith, Kevin Dillon, Donovan Leitch, and more. The plot follows an acidic amoeba-like organism that crashes down to Earth from a meteorite, which devours and dissolves anything in its path as it grows.
Yeah. So IMDb says 6.5. Rotten Tomatoes says 60%. And a user score is lower than that. It's 56. Letterboxd say 3.5. I don't know. I feel like the love isn't quite there for this film as much as it maybe should be. It feels like a classic to me. I don't know.
This is why people can't have nice things. Like, they're stupid.
Like, the gore in this film is so, it's like, I've never forgot that moment where the kid, the letter jacket kid, gets sucked to death.
Yeah, so many people slurped off so effectively in this film.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like, as I've never seen it before, I kind of expected it to be a bit more cheesy. Yeah. Well, I guess it is kind of cheesy, but I expected it to be a bit more, you know, ridiculous.
Yeah.
So when some of the gory bits happened, I was literally like, oh, Jesus Christ, whoa. Can't even look.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think we used to have this. I think maybe we must have rented it from the local VHS rental place and copied it. But I remember wearing, like, watching this so much, along with like Gremlins and those sort of films. But this film, even though it's super gory, I must have been way too young to be watching it. But it's always left a. I think I've never really forgot it. It's just always been a sort of a close one for me. What about you, Andy? When did you first see it?
I was probably the same as you, Luke. I saw it when I was a kid. I'm sure we've seen it. And I think it was probably on the strength of maybe some laissez-faire parenting from Mr. and Mrs. Turner. But, like, also, I definitely had seen the original 50s one as well. Like, I think it had been driven from Channel 4 used to have a creature feature, like late night on a Friday. And I could stare from watching. Quite often it was like an old Godzilla movie. And I'm pretty sure The Blob and, like, things like the Quatermass experiment were part of them as well.
Yeah.
And I'd seen the old black and white version of The Blob. And then I think, like you, we went down the local video shop and there was a new one. So we were allowed to rent it out and I watched The Blob. And, yeah, I guess similar, like, things like Tremors and stuff as well. Things that were probably not suitable for me to watch, but we just watched them all the time and it was, like, a fun thing. And maybe we didn't find The Blob scary because, you know, it's not it's the same color as Calpol, which as a child is the most soothing thing you can encounter, I guess.
It tastes great.
Yeah. Don't cure anything.
Mouthful of The Blob. Don't eat a little mouthful of The Blob because, you know, bad things will happen.
It's, is it written by Frank Darabont? Or is it, I'm sure I saw Frank Darabont's name pop up.
It said co-written, so. By that director, so
the only reason I said
he wrote the screenplay.
The only reason I said
screenplay.
Kevin Dillon's character is called Brian Flagg. Frank Darabont did like tons of Stephen King stuff, didn't he? So I don't know if that's a little reference.
Could be a little reference. Flagg. Yeah. The Randall Flagg, yep.
Kevin Dillon is the guy who looks a little bit like Kevin Bacon in some ways. But he's actually
a bit like Ethan Hawke and others.
And a bit like Ethan Hawke and others. But he's actually the guy from Entourage who I think I watched a couple of episodes of that at some point, felt a bit guilty.
Oh yeah. Oh my god, I didn't even recognize him. Now I've seen him. Yeah, Jesus, he's a funny looking guy in this. He's got like a funny little haircut. And I kept thinking, who does he remind me of? Yeah, I recognize him now.
Ethan Hawke and Kevin Bacon in The Guy from Entourage.
Ethan Hawke and Kevin Bacon rolled into one.
Yeah.
A little bit of that man from Wild Things that isn't Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
Matt Dillon, is that the one?
Yeah. Yeah, he has got a bit of a Matt Dillon quality.
He's all of them. He's all of
them. They might be related. One, They've got the same last name. Who knows? There's no time to check.
So the film opens.
We'll assume they are related. That's the easiest thing to do, I think.
Absolutely must be. So film opens as you would expect. A meteorite. Wait, this isn't happened right at the start, does it? Well, a meteorite crashes, and like an elderly guy with a homeless guy, I guess, who sort of lives out in the sort of deserty sort of part of the town. Finds it. Immediately thinks, I'm going to poke that up a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's early on. I think in the original 50s version, it is maybe even the opening scene. We get a little bit of care about these characters a little bit first here, don't we? We get to see Brian Flagg, our hero.
Yeah.
Doing all the classic bad boy tricks. He's not at the football game with all the other local teens. He's out on his motorcycle wearing his leather jacket and drinking a can of beer and throwing it on the floor like a litterer. But yeah.
He's practicing his Evel Knievel moves. He's trying to get over that ramp.
But he can't do it.
Yeah. You need to completely believe. You need to invest. Yeah, commit to
really
it.
There's really got to be some stakes on the line. Hopefully there'll be an opportunity for him later to really test his commitment to doing that jump. But the old homeless man before the meteorite comes down, he sort of sees him and gives him a polite round of applause, picks up his can and recycles it, making him morally the best character in the film so far. Yeah, and he's got a dog that he looks after. So he's a nice, he's a nice fellow. Meanwhile, we see Meg.
Yeah.
Yeah. We see Meg cheerleading the soccer game. Not the soccer game.
do you recognize her?
Sort of. Not too sure where she's from, though.
She is from Saw.
So she's from, all of them, I believe. So she's Amanda Young, who's like Jigsaw's sort of apprentice, is that right? Who ends up turning on him or something?
They all turn on each other in those films. But she's
apparently, they all turn on each other. What, there's Twist in Saw? I will not hear anything about that.
Straightforward.
I think she's in all of them. She's every single Saw, so... She probably dies about four times as well, I expect. But, you know, I've only ever seen Saul 1-3, so...
We should do a night where we marathon them all. We get really pissed off.
Why are you saying things like this? Why do I get really pissed off? I mean, I'm game for that, because, you know, I like just torturing myself. And
I kind of want to watch the first one, though. I think the first two I'd be up for watching.
Who's in Saul 1? It's your mate, Ben, Lee Wannell.
Lee Wannell, yeah.
Big old Lee Wannell, the flannel. Lee Wannell. Until I hear him saying how he pronounces it, I'm just going to keep calling him that.
I've assumed it's the Artia Wannell.
Yeah, if it turns out after all this time and all this abuse...
Nah, mate, it's Wannell.
If he says Wannell, Australian, then egg on our face.
Yeah.
Egg on both your faces. Mate. One egg, both... Oh, fucking
just
face.
Pulling your tip, mate. It's not 1L. Wannell.
Yeah. Bloody Wannell, mate.
Wannell like flannel. So there's also the two letter jacket wearing kids. One of them I kind of feel like is being propped up to be our main character.
Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Small Paul, big A. Small P, big A, Paul. Because that matches.
Well, we don't get to see
his
P, so it could be big. And then there's everyone, Brian, I think it is. He's like the douchey one.
Piece of shit, Brian.
Yeah. There's a great little intro gag.
That's a great gag. It is a great gag.
Paul is going to go on a date with Meg, but Brian said he needs to get condoms. Brian can get condoms for the night. He goes to the place where you buy the condom shop. And the guy at the counter is like, what are you buying this for? And he says, it's for this guy. This guy's a horny guy. horny captain over here. Look at this horny boy. And then and then they go to, later on, Paul goes to pick up Meg. Meg says, meet my dad. And the dad is
the pharmacist. The
condom seller.
He's like, oh yeah, this piece of work over here, he's going out with some naive girl. And he's talking to like the Reverend as well, isn't he? Reverend, yeah. Mr. Bean. He's talking to Mr. Bean, the Reverend. Like, I only like Jesus, but my mate here, the least I could make him do is buy some Johnnies because I don't want him to get in any trouble. And
he's a real. It's a great gab because he's like behind a newspaper, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, introduced. I didn't see it coming. Did you see it coming?
No, I forgot about it.
See it coming.
And does he say something like he's like ribbed?
Yeah.
He just goes ribbed. Yeah. No. Sorry. It's Brian. It's not ribbed. Oh well, no. Paul. It's Paul, isn't it? The other guy.
Yeah. It's Paul. And this has kind of been. This has been kind of in the setup to things like this. These opening scenes. There are Chekhov's everything in these opening scenes because. we've had a brief cutaway first because we've seen the old man has poked the mysterious smoking crater and got the blob on his hand. And
it does the same blob.
Where he's so the blob's come out. Blob. Where like it does the classic thing that's in the original as well, where he pokes it on a stick and then he's holding the stick downwards, but the blob sneaks up it rather than dripping off like your standard ooze would. it goes on his hand and it stings a bit.
You fucker!
But we've had the setup of Chekhov's everything because after that happens, it cuts into the house where Meg's younger brother is slurping jelly off a plate like an animal.
Oh yeah, that was a good cut.
They're sneaking off. They're parenting in the '80s. Obviously not what it is now. He's immediately suspicious. Where his little mate goes, oh yeah, we're going to go bowling, and then we're going to the cinema to watch like.
What's it called?
It's like garden
hockey mask killer guys.
Hockey mask killer, yeah.
Yeah, hockey mask garden equipment killer 10. and he's like, oh, I absolutely forbid you to see that. And he's like, oh, fair enough, I won't go and see that. Anyway, we mentioned that we're staying over at his house, so I'll just be off back. Bye. But that's he gets Chekhov's jacket put on him. So, oh, wear your jacket. So, I don't want to wear my jacket. So, you'll wear your jacket, mate. And she zipped him into this coat. Meanwhile, our old mate, Brian, he's been to see his friend, the mechanic. The policeman's already given him some jip and said, like, oh, you're too old for juvie now. Next time I see you going down. But then Brian nips to his mate, the mechanic's house, and he shows him Chekhov's weather machine that he has. And then he borrows Chekhov's ratchet set from. He's like, can I borrow your ratchets? And he's like, yeah, sure. Make sure you look after these to explain why you've got a ratchet in your pocket later.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you're pulling it all apart, but this was seamless to me. I never went to...
it's only when you're going back that you see that's... Because I remember when I was watching it, when he pulls out the ratchet later, I was like, why is he just carrying a ratchet? And then when I watched it back a bit today, I was like, that's why he's got a ratchet. You've covered all your bases.
It's weird to say I watched this movie so much as a kid, because the main reveal, the big twist about the blob, I didn't even remember that. I did not remember that as a twist. I was like, oh yeah.
What's the main twist? What?
Well, that is.
Come to it, Ben. Don't be surprised. Get ready. He's going to blow your mind.
Wait, that is a blob. What? That's a twist. Bloody blob. All right. Okay. I think I know what you mean. Okay.
Shawnee Smith's in cahoots with the blobs. He's his apprentice. So I guess after the ribbed situation, Meg and Paul are on their way for their date. Only to find the old man having surprised Brian in the forest by jumping out at him with an axe, only to then try and chop his own arm off with it. They stumble into the road, and that's how we get the gang all together. So we've got the homeless recycling man has a blob on his hand, and he's in great pain. He gets him in. They all get in the car because Paul has hit the homeless man with his car. and they all drive him off to the hospital. And this is all, like, we've gone a little bit back and forth on this, but this is like, what, 10 minutes?
It's 10 not minutes. Long at all. Yeah, yeah.
This is the most useless, like, where have they taken him as well? Is it a hospital? Is it just like a doctor's surgery or something? It's like the most useless, like, you can't go in there with an emergency because no one's got any urgency whatsoever. This guy's got bloody blood on his hand. Can you help him out? Just let me finish whatever. What was she doing?
She does like a stone cold bitch number one power play move where they walk in. It's like, oh, this man, he's in terror, got a terrible injury. Just wait a minute, please.
Wait a minute, please. Just finishes
a game of solitaire or something like that.
Just writing a romance novel here. Don't worry about it.
If you just not rudely interrupt me, please.
Okay. And proceed.
And I'm done.
Yeah. So she's pretty useless. The doctor's pretty bloody useless. Where, like, he's like, I'm seeing a patient.
Yeah, they just put him in a room, don't they?
That doctor was Jack Nance, who is from Twin Peaks, and he plays the main guy in Eraserhead. The guy with the big quiff. Yeah.
He's obviously settled down.
Yeah, yeah, he's more normal, less black and white, surrealist sort of guy. Yeah, yeah. So they hang around for a little bit. At one point, Brian's like, "I'm gonna go. You'll know where I'll be if you need me." And then.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
He goes into the woods.
Yeah, he's like, these guys don't give a shit.
Yeah, because they do that classic thing about asking if the old homeless man has proper medical insurance. It's a barbaric world.
Yeah.
And they also ask him to, like, can you fill out this form. It's like,
completely blob on his hand. About this guy.
What's his name? What's your name, mate? No response. What's your date of birth? 1940. I don't know. Oh, no, wait. This was the bloody 80s, so he's older than that. Anyway, it's just a load of shite, pretty much.
Load of nonsense. They're not looking after him. In many ways, they're the monsters. The blob's just doing what comes natural. They've got this.
Can't blame humanity. The blob for blobbing.
We're all a blob deep down, mate.
Blob is gonna blob.
Yeah. So then we get first sort of glimpse into the horror of the blob itself. The homeless guy looks like he's touching himself under the covers. There's a lot of movement going on under the covers.
And Paul's like, I'm gonna bust him. He's nipped out for a coke, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's going, I'm gonna bust him. He's going to be well embarrassed. It'll probably lighten the whole situation.
And it wasn't a blob on his hand at all. It was like some weird sex toy. Some weird wanking device.
Fleshlight. It's the blob, mate. He's got his hand stuck in a fleshlight.
Maybe he invented it. But he goes and whips the covers off him, only to find...
Splooge.
Got no bloody legs, has he? He's been...
This is pretty horrific.
He's been guzzled up.
I was genuinely like, ah.
And it's really good. Like, I think it's dated quite well.
Yeah, or the practical effect. I think there's only one bit when I was like, that maybe looks a bit too like a rubber mask sort of thing, but most of it is really well. I think when we watched
it, reminds me of the Thing a little bit, the practical effect stuff, especially like the when the blob's kind of like
wobbling tentacle, shaky. Yeah,
wobbly tentacle.
The only bits that do look a bit they sort of computer generated stuff where the blobs moving around and stuff.
Or like what looks like dodgy green screen.
Yeah.
Or something similar.
Yeah.
Maybe not green screen, but you know.
But the gore effects like this are bang on. And they're horrific. Like he looks a right old state. Looks a right dog's breakfast.
Yeah.
100%.
So how does Paul get it then?
So Paul rushes off and that's when he goes and sees a Razorhead. He goes, oh, there's a man. There's a man dying in there. I've seen he's halved.
Yeah.
And the doctor goes,
I'm talking to a patient about something really personal.
Yeah,
and she kind of goes off. For fuck's sake, see you later.
Yeah, and obviously it's a business commodity there. It's probably going to put a complaint in. But he's talking to the someone else about like an ingrown toenail. So he says, oh, guess I'll go and see your homeless man then. And he goes, well, blinking heck, he is melted, isn't he?
He says, what's happened here?
I'm sorry, doctor. Me, Paul, I know I'm star quarterback here, but I'll go nip and phone the sheriff, shall I? And that's what he does. He runs off to phone the sheriff, and he's in the office, but little does Paul know who's that hiding behind the door. It's only the blob.
And, I think this is the most horrific death in it.
For sure.
Because he's like...
the phone to him, he's on him.
Yeah. So the girl, Meg, runs in and she hears him screaming. She goes checking him. And he's not like, he's not dead, but he's completely submerged in blob. And as the blob sort of pulls against his face, it kind of rips his face off, like, as it sort of melts off. It's,
there's a moment where his like, nose is up for a while. They're like,
It's
horrific because I guess you kind of think of Paul as like being
the main character.
At this stage.
Yeah.
And there we go. I mean, this film's pretty brutal in terms of people it lets get blobbed.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's a game show.
Everyone's
like a kids' catch game show.
Let's get blobbed.
What, like, Dave Benson Phillips to present.
So then I think there's Brian. Brian turns up. Paul.
This is the weird thing. I don't know why the blob is trying to cover up its murders at this point because. Meg gets hold of Paul's arm, but it comes off as the blob slurps the rest of him away. And then she, maybe in the parallel universe in which films exist, people are slightly easier to knock out because she gives herself a bit of a bump on the back against the door because their arm comes off and she spirals backwards. And then she collapses with just his arm.
I kind of thought,
but then the police come.
I thought maybe she'd fainted.
Maybe
but
she
did
has.
I missed that she bumped her head.
I guess, because
at the time I was like, that's a terrible time to faint, but then you're not really in control of it, are you? You can't go, just about to quickly do it. Just going to do a faint.
Snooze burn. 5 minutes.
Maybe it's one of those things like she was very surprised, which put her in danger of fainting. And then the slight knock backwards, that was just enough. So you're playing Street Fighter. If your life's down low, if you get a kick in the shins, it's over.
KO.
What a way to go.
But she's out cold, but the blob doesn't eat her. It goes, not ready to be uncovered yet, so I'm going to skulk off somewhere. So the blob has gone, and she has to go home to comfort herself by looking at that snow globe.
Yes.
With a mum and dad. Yes. Meanwhile... the sheriff goes to pick up Brian because Paul very briefly mentions on the phone call that he was there. So they go, all right, let's arrest this kid. We've got
a good chance this kid melted that guy. So
he's melted at least two people. Oh, it's like green grass when you watch Heartbeat, isn't it? The slightest crime.
Yeah.
I know he's got no form for it, but I'm straight around. All petty crime. It's going to be
green grass.
So they go straight round to get him. And I know you got a lot out of this scene, didn't you, Luke? The beard licking.
What? Oh. Oh yeah, because there's a guy. Is he the guy from RoboCop?
It's like the deputy. What's he from?
I recognize him.
I think he is from RoboCop. I'll check while you describe the licking.
Well, he's. I can't remember how this even comes about, but it's like he's grabbed onto Kevin Dillon's head, and then Kevin Dillon. It's like when you were wrestling as a kid, and someone puts the hand on your mouth. Like the way to get back would be to lick the hand, lick the palm of the hand, and they go. But like he licks the cop's like chin,
leaving. And then he doesn't have a beard.
Just
has a moustache.
Yeah. Is it the guy from RoboCop?
He is. He's Emil from RoboCop. I think he's the one that gets toxic wasted and then splashed.
Yeah. He looks. He looks. I was going to say younger, but smaller. His frame is much smaller than this. In RoboCop, he feels chunkier, but I don't know how that works on the calendar. I've completely lost. I guess they go get a sandwich.
He basically says. He licks him because he says, oh, you want to get out of my face, right? Because they've got no evidence that I can melt a person. And he goes, so you better get out of my face. The deputy gets in his face and says, I'm going to be right here in your face. How are you going to get rid of me? So he licks him. And he goes, oh, no. He goes, that worked exactly. Damn it.
This is how I melt people. No, he's using melting saliva.
So they let him go. But as he leaves the sheriff station, Meg turns up having had enough of looking at the snow globe and says, you and I know what's really going on here. He's been blobbed, hasn't he? we've got to try and work this out. So they say, all right, well.
Is the blob like following them at this point then? Because they go to the diner, don't they?
The blob's got other business to do first, Ben. He goes up to deal with a certain
rapist.
Do you remember this bit? It's up in there at the makeout point. So remember his friend from the shop that was buying condoms? He's a real piece of work. So he is there with his date, and she's like, "No, don't feel me up. Consent's important, mate. Even here in the '80s." And he's like, "Oh, but I give you my Super Bowl ring or whatever the equivalent is. That means you're my girl." And you know, he goes, oh, well, I'll tell you what, I'll at least go and get you another drink then. And then he's
got a
bar.
I like his little cocktail bar in his boot.
He's got a little rapey cocktail bar in his...
It's full of, full of date rape drugs and lots of Super Bowl rings as well. So it's clear that this guy is no good. So if anything were to happen to him, we needn't feel all that bad. and he goes back through, and his date mysteriously has gone very quiet already and is looking a little bit rubbery, but he's at the same time he kind of unbuttons a couple of buttons of her blouse there and goes to feel her up, and then he gets a nasty surprise when what should burst out of her and then make her head collapse in like a Capri Sun. It's only the blob.
It's only a bloody blob, mate. Bloody blob.
Gets him good and proper.
That bit's quite the thingy with like the bits of blob tentacles that are shoving out her eyes and shuddering as they're trying to get him.
Definitely.
They make short work of that guy, though.
Get him, they do. And then we go and join the other guys at the diner, I guess, where Brian is given a sandwich, even though they've closed, and they get to chat a little bit and they do a little bit of exposition about what they might do next, right? I forget what they talk about. I think it talks about how Brian doesn't really believe in society in the small town. Everyone's worthless and everyone's no good. And Meg tells him off for being a shit.
You being a shit. At the same time, in the diner in the back, you've got the lovely lady who gave him a free sandwich. Gave him some free cake, I think, free pie. She's cleaning up in the back, and there's something in the garbage disposal.
Yeah, and the chef goes, oh, don't worry, I'll deal with that. I'll get the plunger out. But he wishes he hadn't helped to be helpful now. No good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah. It's a good moment. Maybe we'll talk about this at the end, but which has been your favourite death? Which has been your favourite gore gag? There's some good ones in this.
Yeah, this one's pretty good.
Sucks into this.
There's probably I quite like a death coming up in a minute actually with a phone box. I think that's pretty ingenious.
That one's like really good.
I'd like to see it play back slower actually, because I feel like when something we'll talk about it in a sec.
Okay.
But yeah, well, this guy gets pulled down the drain, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The blob kind of reaches out, grabs him, pulls him in. And then just the drain kind of pops or something and shoots some blood out everywhere. Brian and Meg go and hide in the walk-in freezer.
And this comes in very handy because it runs up the corridor after them. But but then it doesn't come in. It starts creeping under the door, Jack Frost style.
It's like a tongue coming in and going, and then it gets stuck.
Then it gets all frozen, like Jeff Daniels' tongue in Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
And they smash it off. And so it can't go in the cold. It freezes quick as you like, lickety split. Meanwhile, our other friend, the lady, doesn't get on too well because she runs to the phone box, tries to get the sheriff. The sheriff,
just poor chap,
has eaten shit off screen, because literally she phones the sheriff station and the deputy or whoever answers the phone says, the sheriff's on his way down to the diner because he's asked the waitress out for a date earlier on. He's obviously on the way down to see her. And then he just floats by in the blob, his eye hanging out. And everything.
That was quick. Sheriff, I'm stuck. Sheriff?
Yeah. Was great.
But then, Ben, this is the bit you were talking about, right?
Yeah. So she runs into the phone box, obviously, with the intent to. Well, she's already in the phone box, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
She's already in the phone box. So, the blob just appears, sort of comes down over the top of the phone box and just crushes her. But there's a moment, obviously, where we see her get sort of enveloped in the blob, and it kind of looks like she just disintegrates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In this really quick shot where you kind of just see.
In my mind, she like explodes, but I'm not sure what happens. It's like obviously like they cut the shot to from a real woman to a model, but it's a good little shot.
I liked it. That was pretty intense. She got blobbed.
Gets obliterated,
and then it goes atoms. Is this when it goes into the sewer and the Reverend sees it briefly just before it does go into the sewer?
Yeah
I think this is where the Reverend, because he goes into the shop at this point, and the Reverend character is an unusual one because he seems a little bit unusual when they first meet him, but like he's not like a doomsday prophet or anything. He's fine.
Yeah.
He's just like a normal chap. But then he wanders into the diner. Brian and Meg have since left, having knocked the jam over. That's all they really do as they leave. There's a cat eating the jam, which attracts the Reverend's attention. And then he finds some crystals of the frozen blob, which he puts into, because they're all sparkly. And he goes, ooh.
Yeah.
And he puts it into a jam jar that he's found.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what are the crystals again? Where did he find them? Sorry if I missed that.
They're just the frozen blob from by the...
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Little blobby boy. Okay.
Mr. Blobby. Yeah, somehow they end up... Brian and Meg end up in the woods again.
They head to the woods because they know where else the deputy's gone.
Yeah.
But isn't just deputy like the guy who's just been... mauled.
No, that's the sheriff. This is the guy that Brian licked his beard off.
He's going to lick the rest of his facial hair off. We're going to find that sheriff, deputy even. So they go to the woods, and that's where they come across the ET lights sort of thing, just sort of envelop them in the middle of the woods. And you've got the secret government in hazmat suits, giant...
Dr. Meadows.
Classic. Yeah. So he basically says the whole town's got to be quarantined from this. Do they sort of say what it is at this stage, or what they think it is?
This is where he explains that it is a comet, which I think is from the story from the original blob. This is where the twist comes in a bit later on, but it's a comet that's got some type of alien bacteria or something like that on it, right? Some ooze. Ivan Ooze. Yeah.
And they kind of try and quarantine them, don't they? They put them into the back of this truck. But Brian, he just hates authority figures. He's got no time for them. No matter what they tell him to do, this is going to save your life. This is going to protect you. He's like, I'll do the bloody opposite, mate. All right? Because I'm an absolute edgelord.
and thankfully, for an edgelord, he's got his socket set. He's got his ratchet that he borrowed earlier on.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he has. And he gets out, jumps out of a moving truck. Always a good idea.
Onto like road.
Yeah. So he escapes, but Meg goes to the town where they're like quarantining everybody in like the town hall. Yeah. And when they're there, she realizes that Kevin, her younger brother, is missing. So he's obviously gone to watch the film about the hockey murdering guy. Her dad is trying to question like one of the scientists, well, one of the hazmat suit guys, and says, listen here, I pay your salary. Yeah, I'm a tax-paying guy.
The classic. I wonder if there's ever been a situation where that has worked, where some authority or government figure has gone, you know, you're right,
actually.
You do pay my salary, and if you personally were dissatisfied with what I was doing, you'd get me fired, couldn't you? So I better just do it.
So Meg, like, sneaks off, or does she just leave? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think while the dad's having a go at the one guy they've got to guard all these people. She chips off to head to where her brother is going to be at the cinema. And this is, I think this might be where we get like the film in film, right? Because we get a bit of the film.
The masked
That's right.
Killer film. Yeah.
And for some reason, the kid in the cinema is more intolerant than the adult because there's a guy behind them at the cinema going, she's going to go in there, but the killer's going to get her anyway. And the kid's like, shut up, man.
You shut the hell up.
Trying to enjoy this film. They've had a really hard week. And then the guy, in a very mature fashion, just throws some popcorn at him.
Yeah. I really, really don't blame him now. The kid, sorry, for getting annoyed. Because this guy is...
A real piece of work. Christ. I hope something happens to him as well.
Mm.
But meanwhile, I guess at this point, we know that the other friend's brother or something like that, he's the usher. That's how they've got into the cinema in the first place.
Yeah. He runs in at one point with like a torch and just shines it in their faces and shouts, you guys keep it down, you're going to get me into so much trouble. It's like,
tell that man off for talking.
Yeah.
Shut up, mate. then we go up and we get a very brief bit of Chekhov's yo-yo where he's there. The projectionist is playing with the yo-yo and it's really hot up in the projection room.
Yeah.
And he hears a bit of moaning and groaning from down in the aircon. So classic remedy, of course. You want to stick your head in there, have a little look-see. And so he does.
Yeah,
I think it was this guy's face that looked a bit rubbery. You know, he's suspended on the ceiling.
Yeah,
he looks like he was boiling a tin of baked beans, and it exploded him onto the ceiling. So now he's stuck there. he's got a bit of a Freddy Krueger face as well going on.
Yeah, I think from the sort of sinewy bits of burnt, half melted face, not a patch on the effect they use for Paul's, but. Yeah, so he gets got. Before he puts his head in the air conditioner, he shouts down to the manager of the cinema, oh, come and look at this. The manager walks in, and then he finds him on the ceiling when the yo-yo comes down, right? So he looks up, and then he also gets got by the blob. And then as Meg arrives, we see the blob then taking on the cinema auditorium itself, right? And it gets the guy is spoiling another bit of the film, and then he gets slurped off by the blob, which is, serves him right.
The blob's pretty good at dealing out justice.
Social justice.
Right? Social justice blob.
Yeah.
Get on him.
Doesn't it sort of pour through the screen? Or am I...
It comes out the front and the back. It all goes to chaos. I guess maybe it's wrecked the projector. Maybe that's what happens up there, because it pulls off the guy behind them. Is it on the ceiling and it's coming down on all sides, though, maybe?
Okay.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It's all over the shop. The blob's massive now.
Is it? I can't tell how big it is. You seem to change size depending on the shop. But so Everyone like is panic. Everyone's running out of cinema. People aren't picking the rubbish up. They're not checking they've got all the belongings as they sort of pace out of there. The two little kids, one of them gets stuck as the jacket.
Chekhov's jacket that his mom made him out of, his hood gets stuck. Yeah. So Meg is able to get him out of the jacket just in time. And the brother, who hasn't really been in it until the point when he arrived at the cinema, he shouts out the window like, "Get out of there!" And they do. They take his advice.
Yeah, there was a moment where I was like, "Who was that?" And then I realised it was the brother.
Yeah, he tells them to get out of there. They take his advice and they leg it for the sewer. Meg loses a little bit of hair as it gets cinched off. But they're on their way. They're heading down into the sewer. And I guess this is why it's important that the Usher brother comes out, because this is when we go back to Dr. Meadows. For some reason, Brian has gone to have one more look at what they're up to, even though he said he was leaving. He's gone to get his bike, hasn't he? So he's gone to steal his motorbike back, and he hears Dr. Meadows say, "Oh, an eyewitness has just seen the blob chase some people into the sewer. If we seal this corridor, and this corridor, we can trap it." And this is where Dr. Meadows shows his true colours and goes, "The civilians? Expendable."
Yeah.
Oh, and he also says what the thing was, right? Because they reveal at this point it isn't a comet that has got the blob on it.
It's a US flag on it.
It's a satellite. Yeah, it's a satellite. Yeah. And it's they have sent a bacteria or virus up to space, and it's turned into the blob.
I don't remember that at all from growing up watching this film. I don't think the story was that important to me growing up. I think it was all about the deaths and stuff.
I don't want any backstory, mate. I'm not interested in that.
But they made the blob. It's all man-made.
Yeah. Man-made blobbage.
So Brian drives his motorcycle. Where does he get to go into the sewer?
Well, they chase him, but then he gets to that jump bit that he couldn't make earlier.
He makes the jump and beats a flight of soldiers.
Yeah.
Doesn't he flip them off?
He flips them off as he goes. Yeah. Yeah.
Even though there's still bullets whizzing past his head, and he's like, still inches from death. So in the sewers, obviously Meg, Kevin, and what's the kid called? The other kid, Eddie. They're all sort of trying to run as fast as they can through chest high water, which is which is never easy. And when they're sort of climbing. They climbing up some stuff, and then is that when the blob gets?
They get to a ladder, and that's right. As they're climbing up the ladder, bold move for a movie, right? The kid gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And doesn't just get swallowed up off screen. Like we get to see him in his half melted state.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Properly blobbed.
Yeah, but Meg dives in after him, but nothing happens. It's just for dramatic tension, so the brother can shout after him, Meg!
And she's like, underwater for ages. What's she bloody doing under there?
This is sewer water, isn't it?
She should know. You can't get someone out of the blob. This is scum. It's too late.
Yeah.
So see you later. They climb up, but she can't fit through the grate. So she sends the brother on ahead to safety, and she jumps back down into the water. But some army dudes arrive just at that time, and they take the hit from the blob, and they get eaten by it, giving her time to escape.
Unlucky.
And run into Brian on his motorbike.
Okay, so they're still in the sewer, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then there's the government guy who's actually a good guy. He's got a rocket launcher on his back. Chekhov's rocket launcher.
Yeah, Chekhov's rocket launcher. And he's like, "Oh, I've got this rocket launcher with me, but we can't fight the blob, and they've left us here to die. It's it's fucked, isn't it?"
But they found where they get the ladder to go out, and Dr. Meadows seals it up, and then he informs her to park the van just down the top of it, like a proper dick move.
Yeah, he's like, no, I know you could escape, but I don't want you to escape because you pissed me off. And there's some great dialogue here where Brian actually goes like, "Meadows, you son of a bitch!" "You son of a bitch, Meadows." But then Brian, this is where the army guy has gone doolally. He's obviously lost it because you can tell he's had a rough time. He's got a little crack in his visor. got a little cut on his head, and he's really having a bad day of it. But Brian is the ultimate badass here. I can, like, being honest, guys, even with years upon years of video game exposure and so on, if you handed me a rocket launcher, I reckon it'd take me a little bit of time to work out how to operate it.
This one's just a one button job, I think.
Yeah, he literally just, but he holds it one handed. So
some of those giant confetti things.
Yeah, like a party cat.
I
do the thing that I always do actually in games, which I fire it at the target while I'm stood too close. And I end up dead.
It's too much fire at
someone just like three feet away from me, and end up dead. Yeah, I mean, I do that in games, so you know.
But there's no splash damage for Brian. He literally at the inner sewer. He takes a rocket launcher. Normally, I would say, traditionally, you'd shoulder mount that type of device. But no, he just holds it in one hand under the upwards pipe of the sewer and just fires it upwards. And the explosion is powerful enough to explode the van off the manhole cover.
Yeah.
And allow them to climb up just before the blob arrives, leading them to a standoff between, like, a Mexican standoff, if you will, between the military guys led by Dr. Meadows, Brian, who's got himself an M16, and the sheriff that really doesn't like Brian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Actually, the end, his respect for the law and what is right comes on through. And he turns his gun on the men. Dr. Meadows loses his patience. The guys all appreciate the story that it's a man-made experiment and they're just trying to cover it all up. And before Dr. Meadows can do anything bad, who should come to the rescue? But the blob.
The blob. He's always at the right place at the right time.
Doesn't he fill up Dr. Meadows' suit? Is that what happens? Does it go up his...
Yeah, kind of swallows him from the inside of the suit. Sucks him out, I think.
And slurps him down the drain. Slurps him down the cover.
I get confused around this bit. So they're all hiding inside the town hall. And they barricaded it up. At what point does Brian go and get the snow machine?
This is as they're all running in. Everything goes wild now. There are people getting done in left, right, and, you know, left, right, and centre. The Reverend briefly gets set on fire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because some people get the wrong idea and they try to use fire against the blob, and it just backfires and sets the Reverend on fire. So they put the Reverend out and get him inside. Meg gets cornered by the blob but uses a fire extinguisher, which... it does not want a bead of. It's like, nah, it's coming away. It's cringing back. It's chilly. It doesn't like it. So she's able to get in, and everyone gets the idea that it doesn't like cold. So they're using the fire extinguishers to drive it away from the door. But it does get the sheriff's deputy after he's made a hero turn. His arc is complete, and it has to pull him away through a cupboard.
Yeah.
Poor guy. He melts in every film I've seen him in.
Always getting melted by acid. But that's when Brian runs off to get the Chekhov snow, the most powerful snow machine in the world.
Well, remember the soundtrack at this point as well? The score is just like such a epic. It's just like the army sort of drums going. It's pretty good. It's pretty badass. I quite like this moment. This was good.
Meg,
so the blob's like massive now, obviously.
The blob is huge now. It's like a contemporary reference. It's like your end of Resident Evil 2, right, Ben? With your big blob on the train. It's huge.
Yeah. It's
big as a train car.
It's almost ridiculous, isn't it? It's like, how can we make this villain scarier? But just bigger, bigger, bigger. What kind of happens in this final standoff?
It's got tentacles all over the place because it got angry because one of the army men who was good threw some grenades at it and made it furious.
Yeah.
And it's huge.
Yeah, that was like the army man. It was like it flattened one of the army guys and he pulled the pin on the grenades, didn't he? Like as it was. He's fuming. Absolutely fuming.
The blobs all over the place. It's not messing around. It's got massive, just pink absorby tentacles slamming everyone. Brian crashes the snow truck into it, and it doesn't damage it because crashing a snow truck into someone isn't the same as freezing it with a snow truck. Brian has made an error there. He's not as effective at using
snow trucks. It's just called a snow truck.
As he is rocket launchers. He's not as good. But thankfully, Meg comes out with an M16. She shoots the blob first, and it makes a few dents in it. But then she shoots... You know, on all cars and vehicles, there's that critical piece that if you explode it, it will... if you shoot this spot on the vehicle, it will explode the vehicle and make the elemental effect of the vehicle...
Just the petrol cap, isn't it?
Everywhere.
I kind of feel like if you shoot the petrol cap...
Some would say that's a design flaw, but, you know, it comes in handy when you need to blow up a thing to destroy a blob.
Like the Death Star school of design. There's one area, and if you shoot it, it will absolutely be obliterated. Mads Mikkelsen himself invented it with this flaw in case they ever needed to use it.
There we go. Does it need that bit, Mads? Yeah, it's important.
You need to vent your exhaust. She shoots that with the M16, and it explodes just in time to freeze the blob utterly. It gets 100% of it. It's all frozen up, and everyone comes out, and it starts to snow.
Ah, yeah, that's a magical moment, isn't it?
It's not Christmas though, so it's not that magical. But it is a town that's established is its economy is heavily reliant on there being snow for the winter. So in many ways, the town has been saved.
Yeah,
everyone seems really happy at this moment, including like the kid Kevin. I thought he'd just seen his best mate die. He's like,
it's snowing. Oh, everyone,
it's snowing.
And
everyone,
then they start dancing, like the end of Turtles.
Go Ninja Go.
There is like a post credit sequence or pre-credit sequence with the the disfigured preacher. He's now on the road or something, giving his sermons. And then I don't know why he's got like a little bit of, I don't understand what he says. So he says the doomsday is going to arrive soon, but he hasn't decided when.
The doomsday, and it's like, oh, I saw the shit. Good people and bad people all died when doomsday comes, and who will be saved? Only the faithful, mate. Only the faithful. And one of his people comes up to him and says, "Oh, Reverend, when is the doomsday that you're always chatting about?" It's like, oh, I don't know. God will give me a sign. And then he just looks at the blob that's now not frozen anymore, but thankfully can't eat glass. Glass not on its diet. But it's
cool to have a little like pet blob on the shelf. Have people around and say, yes, my blob.
Will it stay alive if it doesn't get fed though? I mean, feed it anything?
I guess it was all right in space all that time, wasn't it?
That's true. Yeah. It's just a blob. Pop it's like the goo from Ghostbusters, isn't it? Maybe it likes music.
Yeah.
Well, it's a dangerous thing to keep, though, because, you know, I know he wants to do it for a doomsday, but, you know, how did it not get broken when he was falling over while on fire?
Yeah, that's true. Did he have it in a jar? Or did he have it in something else? He had it
maybe
in a Tupperware box.
Maybe he put that down, like maybe put it to the side when he was going to be on fire. He quickly placed it.
I've got a bit of trivia for you. Although it's not trivia, it's the name game.
Love a bit of name game.
Okay, good. Some of these might be reaching a bit far. We'll see. Number one. So for new listeners, I sum up or I say a log line to a film and these guys have to say the name of the film and the name will be similar or it will rhyme with the blob. Okay, so this film I'm talking about right now is it's about a giant head that falls from space and consumes everyone in a local town with its big toothy maw, and it also won't stop gossiping.
Is it The Gob?
Correct, The Gob. Number two, a radioactive computer lands from outer space, and on it they find a website which is just a diary of some dude's life. But it's really engrossing, and soon the entire town is consumed with the daily posts.
The blog?
Yeah.
The blog, right. Yeah.
Number three. When a small town's inhabitants all spontaneously turn into little blocks of cheese, the local homeless puppy gets very hungry.
um,
Yeah, what?
So when a small town's inhabitants all spontaneously turn into little cubes, diced cubes of cheese, the local homeless puppy gets very hungry. It's way too, so you're probably overthinking it.
The dog? There's yeah. a lot to, there's a...
The dog.
Oh my god.
Yeah, don't overthink these. Number four. More of a real life horror, this one. When a man signs a contract, he finds his waking hours are consumed with admin, emails, and spreadsheets.
Oh, the job.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And the last one, a nuclear wanger falls out of the skies and begins to wallop people, and it's dead annoying.
The knob.
Yeah, correct.
The knob.
I was thinking that you might play the name game, Luke. I even have one for you, but it's very, very niche. I'd be surprised if you can get it. I can have a trivia one for you if you would like one, though.
Yeah, go for it.
An 80s children's educational puppet with a penchant for spitting on the screen and writing his own name wreaks havoc in a small town.
I don't know. Is this like a zippy?
Unfortunately, it is the Pob. Now,
Pob. If you... okay. Yeah.
Are you guys too young for Pob?
I think I'm too young for Pob. I don't remember.
No, I remember Pob.
Have a Google of Pob, people at home.
Yeah, he's a funny little dude, isn't he? Yeah. Mike looks like Michael Gove.
He does look a bit like Michael Gove, or rather, Michael Gove looks a bit like him.
I do remember this guy. He's freaky.
That's Pob. Yeah, there he is.
Yeah. So we need to rate the film, and I'm a bit not entirely sure what I'm going to go for with this one.
It's the first time I saw this. So I'll go first. It was the first time I saw it. I was like pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed it. It was a really good monster movie. The gore was great. The practical effects. I was invested all the way through. And it kept sort of hitting me with things I didn't expect. So I'm going to give it a B+, I think.
Cool. What about you, Andy?
I am with Ben on this one. I think The Blob, for its name and what it's based on, is far better than it has any right to be. A lot of respect for the practical effects that went into there. And for a film which should be utterly ridiculous, it actually pulls off some serious moments of like tension and some great moments. Like I say, some of those gore effects are genuinely good. So yeah, I'm going to go with a B+ as well. And also it's enjoyable. I could stick this on and watch it of an evening.
I mean, that's the thing. I was worried to be kind of blinded by nostalgia, but watching it back, it's just really watchable. Like it doesn't drag or anything at any point. I do feel like it would have maybe rated higher if the characters were a bit more interesting, but I don't think you need it. I'm just going to give a B+ as well, I think.
Across the board.
It's a good time at the cinema, this. Well, not the cinema. You're not allowed there. Too many blobs. Thanks for listening. Is there anything anyone wants to mention before we wrap up?
No. I think that's it, dude. What are we? What do you fancy doing next week?
We're doing Pet Sem next week. Pet Sem 1 and 2.
Pet Sem 1 and 2, double bill.
Sounds good.
Very nice.
So, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, become a patron over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider rating and reviewing. Remember to hit subscribe. Come to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/HorrorHangoutBoardAdvisors, or just search for Horror Hangout in the Facebook searchy bar thing.
Thanks. It's easier.
Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a right horror dude.
Thanks, Luke.
Much easier. Thanks to Andy.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.